Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and a very warm welcome to today's broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick and I'll be with you for the next half hour. In a few moments, I'll be bringing you the latest on Pope Benedict XVI's pastoral journey to Africa, which took him first to Cameroon and then to Angola, where he is right now. Well, thanks so much for joining me once again. Benedict XVI is currently on his first pastoral journey to Africa as Roman Pontiff in this continent where 150 million Catholics live. He arrived in Angola's capital, Luanda, on Friday 20th of March, on the second leg of this visit. He began this journey, in fact, on Tuesday 17th of March, touching down in that other African nation he visited, Cameroon, where he said in French, God bless Africa.
Dieu bénisse l'Afrique.
He pronounced these words shortly after touching down in this nation's capital, Yaoundé. Where he stressed over a quarter of the population is Catholic, and so well placed to carry forward a mission of healing and reconciliation.
The Synod Fathers will reflect together on the theme, the Church in Africa in service to reconciliation, justice and peace.
The last pope to be seen in this part of the world was John Paul II. It was 1995, and on that occasion, he promulgated the post-synodal exhortation Ecclesia in Africa, a document which was the result of that first special assembly for Africa of the Synod of Bishops, held in Rome the previous year. And so it was that, 14 years on, his immediate successor, Benedict XVI, was back to pick up from that document, looking ahead to the second of these special assemblies for Africa scheduled for October 2009, issuing on this occasion on African soil the working document for it, known in Latin as the Instrumentum Laboris, announcing the theme of this synod, the Church in Africa in service to reconciliation, justice and peace. A theme which seems particularly fitting for the second leg of his journey to Africa, which begins Friday in Angola, where 55% of the population is Catholic and where reconciliation, justice and peace is finally being embraced after 27 years of civil war. Let's recall how the ceasefire was signed there in 2002, following years during which the ruling popular movement for the liberation of Angola and the rebel group known as UNITA were bitter rivals, even before the country gained independence from Portugal in 1975. But on a more joyful note, let's get back to the Pope's arrival in this country's capital, Luanda, as we join my colleague John Baptist Tumasine, who was on hand when the Pope touched down at the Fevereiro airport there.
Pope Benedict XVI received a thunderous welcome on his arrival in Angola on Friday afternoon. He was received by the President of Angola, José Eduardo dos Santos, senior government officials, diplomats, and religious leaders. Tens of thousands of Angolans, including lay people, nuns, seminarians, and priests, sang and danced. Many had been waiting for his arrival for days. They carried banners saying, "Welcome, Pope Benedict, and bless our country." In his speech at the airport, the Pope addressed himself to Angola and to Africa. He said he remembers the people of Angola and of Africa in his prayers and expressed his thanks for the warm welcome. Angola emerged out of a destructive civil war in 2002. The Pope referred to that conflict in his speech.
Africa in general,
e o povo di Angola in particolare, a quem desejo oferecer o meu cordial encorajamento a prosseguir no caminho da pacificação.
Noting that he at one time experienced war and therefore knows well its effects, he called for dialogue as the most effective way of resolving differences and of overcoming conflict and tension, because it has the potential to transform society into a house of peace.
E por conseguinte também da vossa pátria, uma casa de paz e fraternidade.
Angola is a country endowed with natural resources such as minerals, oil, a good climate, rivers, the sea, forests and others.
Queridos amigos angolanos, a vosso territorio è ricco, a vossa nação é forte.
The Holy Father invited the citizens of this country to make use of these resources in a manner that helps to build peace not only in Angola, but also on the entire African continent. He warned against the temptation by leaders to use their power to oppress others, and recalled that within the borders of Angola, there are still many poor people who demand respect for their rights. He called upon policymakers not to forget those who live in absolute poverty. Angola marks this year 517 years of evangelization. The Pope praised the first Christians of this country, who, by accepting the gospel message, created the ground for the Christian faith to germinate, grow, and flourish. Addressing himself to the faithful, he said he wanted to use his visit to strengthen the Angolan Catholic community in its faith. From Angola in Luanda, this is John Baptiste Tumusiime.
Well, our thanks there go to John Baptiste for reporting on Benedict XVI's arrival in Angola, where he'll stay until Monday. We now step back in time to the first leg of this African journey, which took the Pope to Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé, where on Thursday he visited the Centre Cardinal Paul-Émile Léger for the Disabled, underlining one of his favourite themes, faith as charity in action. "You are not alone in your pain," he said in French.
"Dans cette douleur, vous n'êtes pas seul."
For Christ himself is close to all who suffer.
Car le Christ lui-même est solidaire de tous ceux qui souffrent.
As several hundred people, many from church-run clinics in Cameroon, crowded a courtyard at the centre, situated on a hillside in a poor neighbourhood of the city. Festus Tarawali witnessed this encounter, describing it as the most touching of all, something he mentioned when he asked the Pope's spokesman, Jesuit Father Federico Lombardi, for his impressions. Let's listen.
"The most touching moment of this trip is this meeting at the Cardinal Léger Center, you know, the Pope with the world of suffering. What message should we take home from the encounter?"
"I think that the central message is love. Love and hope. That is, the Church, through the Pope, demonstrates that she loves really all the people in Africa, in particular the suffering people, the sick, the weak, and so on. They have to experience the love of the Church as a sincere love, is something that comes really from the profound of the earth. And hope, because if there is this encounter of love between the Church, between Christ and the suffering person, then we have a rich source of hope, of sense. The suffering is something that is a great richness for mankind, for the Church, and for every one of us. I think that this revelation of the sense of the suffering was really the center of this moving encounter of the Pope with the sick."
And of course, after that meeting with the world of suffering, the Pope went back to the nuncio's residence and met with the members of the Special Assembly for Africa of the Synod of Bishops. What's the way forward from now on, because he symbolically opened the Second African Synod? What's the way forward from now on to October, when the synod proper starts?
Yes, I think this beginning was not only symbolic, but was very real, because I have heard many, many important testimonies about the situation in Africa. There is already a richness, a basis to go on, also for the Pope and for the other collaborators of the Pope that were with him here. And I think that is really a very good impulse for the work of the Synod. Now that the Instrumentum Laboris is in the hands of every bishop conference, it will be in a short time in the hands of all the bishops of Africa, and in particular of the delegates of bishop conference that will come to Rome, and will be in the hands also of all people that are desiring to collaborate, to reflect, and to bring to Rome, to the representative, good counsel, good impulses and good ideas. And then I hope that there will be a large movement of reflection that convey to the delegates the experiences, the requests, the idea, the hopes that will give origin to a very important encounter of prayer and of reflection with the Pope in Rome in October. And then another step will be the reflection about what in the Synod will be said, to have at the end again a document, a synthesis document that can be used by the churches, local churches in Africa, for the next 10 years or 15 years.
Father, the last question. Pope has been here in Cameroon for the past 3 days. 3 days of very intense activities. The Pope has been to many places. He has spoken to many people, met with civil authorities, the bishops and ordinary people. What's the impression like after this visit?
I think that the Pope has received a very profound impression by the people of Cameroon, of the readiness of these people to listen to the Pope and to be thankful to him for his coming and for his encouragement for a good development of their land. And this is symbolically for all Africa, because we have had the beginning of the Synod that is something that has a sense for the entire continent. And then, in this sense, through Cameroon, the Pope has experienced the readiness of Africa to respond very well to his proposal and his encouragement in the sense of the gospel, of the doctrine, the social doctrine of the Church, to renew the society and Christian life in Africa. In this sense, I think that this first time of the trip was very successful, and the Pope is very happy, and I think that the Church in the continent feels on the right way to prepare the Synod and to renew herself.
And our thanks there go to the Pope's spokesperson, Jesuit Father Lombardi, and of course to Festus Tarawali. On his arrival in Africa, Pope Benedict had highlighted how this continent has a distinguished place in the annals of church history, with its witness of saints during the first centuries of Christianity, mentioning a few of them.
Le témoignage de nombreux grands saints de ce continent, Saint Cyprien, Sainte Monique, Saint Augustin, Saint Athanase, pour n'en nommer que quelques-uns, montre la place remarquable de l'Afrique dans les annales de l'histoire de l'Église.
The Holy Father also then went on to mention the figure of a more recent African saint, Josephine Bakita, a figure he highlighted in his encyclical Spe Salvi.
The life of Saint Josephine Bakita offers a shining example of the transformation that an encounter with the living God can bring to a situation of great hardship and injustice. In the face of suffering or violence, poverty or hunger, corruption, abuse of power, a Christian can never remain silent.
He did this, as we know, after becoming the third pope to set foot on African soil. Well, I'm sure all of you know who the first one was. He was that first Roman pontiff ever to board an aeroplane and travel, the pilgrim pope, Paul VI. It was July 1969 when he travelled to Uganda.
For the first time in history, the successor of Peter as vicar of Christ sets foot upon the soil of Africa.
Nigerian-born Cardinal Francis Arinze, currently travelling with Pope Benedict in Africa, once expressed to me his emotions regarding this particular journey.
He loved the mission church, and he showed it by the way he treated the mission bishops. Indeed, from that time, the number named bishops in the mission countries increased at a very fast rate. He came to Africa, to Kampala, 1969. He inaugurated the SECAM, the Symposium Episcopal Conferences of Africa and Madagascar. He honored the martyrs of Uganda, and he gave that wonderful speech, which Africans do not forget, where he spoke on enculturation and the necessity for the church in Africa to undertake missionary work also among Africans.
A burning and much discussed question arises.
He said, you Africans are to be missionaries to yourselves.
The adaptation of the gospel and of the church to African culture.
And also that once we maintain the unity of faith, we can and we must be African. So that's very encouraging. Of course, the work remains, enculturation. It is not something completed. But at least no one can say that the church does not encourage it. So Pope Paul VI should be thanked for that.
The missionary church Cardinal Francis Arinze highlighted was dear to Paul VI. But exactly 40 years later, Benedict XVI also highlighted upon his arrival the importance of this missionary church. Right up to the present day, waves of martyrs and missionaries have continued to bear witness to Christ throughout Africa.
Depuis lors et jusqu'à nos jours, d'innombrables missionnaires et de nombreux martyrs ont continué de rendre témoignage au Christ dans toute l'Afrique.
Benedict XVI there was echoing John Paul II's words when he spoke back in June 1992 on one of his 16 visits to African nations. It was while he was in Angola, with a civil war still going on. And while on this occasion this pope called ceaselessly for an end to the bloodshed, he also pointed to the missionary work in the midst of the horrors of war, thanking catechists in a particular way for keeping the faith alive, despite, he insisted, their state of total isolation in the jungle. At this point in the broadcast, I thought I'd share with you the words of missionaries themselves. First of all, those of Angolan-born Divine Word Father, Stanisław Chinekase. His order may not have been among the first to settle in this nation back in 1491, but at this very moment they are extremely involved with at least a dozen houses there, among other things in the field of education.
The mission had a school, elementary school, later on in the seminary. So even today, some of the most important people serving in the government and main offices are ex-seminarians. I have some of my companions now working and as high officials, army or the government. They were seminarians, and they acknowledged the work of the church in this field.
Yeah. Given the dramatic history of Angola, I couldn't help but ask Father Chinikase about the legacy of the Civil War, one that must have left scars running deep among all generations, both at a physical and psychological level.
Yes, it is true. You cannot say there's no family in Angola. You cannot say that among my relatives, some people have not suffered from the war anyway. Directly, some injured or some lost. We are aware of it. The church also, our governors also aware of it. That's why they say that the church can also play a greater role in this field of the healing, you know? Yeah, and that is a long process. Yeah, reconciliation, okay, but we should still overcome maybe some, you know, revenge that could be Eden, we never know. I think the church can do more because the church also has this moral authority. Even during the war, was the only voice was speaking about reconciliation, about peace, about negotiation. So we have this, I think, this moral authority, but also the duty to help people to overcome all these scars. But you know, the civil war is something terrible, no? Because it literally divides peoples, the same family. Now our message is just to try to counseling people, but also to give this strong message that the gospel can give.
Well, thanks there go to Angolan-born Divine Word Father, Stanisław Chinikase, who's on the General Council of the Divine Word Missionaries. Another of the many missionary orders present in the Angolan capital, Luanda, is the Society of African Missions, SMA. Earlier in the week, I spoke to the Superior General of the order, Father Kieran O'Reilly, who recently travelled to Luanda.
Tell me about your missionaries in Luanda then.
It is, for us, a recent enterprise in that we are a society in existence over 150 years. And our initial missionary thrust was along the west coast of Africa. 10 years ago, members of the Italian province of our society established a presence in Luanda. And that is a very big parish in a new diocese that has been cut off from the diocese of Luanda. It's the diocese of Cajito. Cajito, the city is south of Luanda, but that part of the diocese is a portion of Luanda. It has only been cut off about 2 years ago with a new young bishop, an SVD bishop. It is part of what I found out to be an extraordinary expanding city. Luanda, I suppose, because of the war and the background, developed probably slowly. But now that peace has come, it is spreading out in all directions at an enormous rate with a huge influx of population from the rural areas, as is happening indeed in many of the great, if not all of the great cities of Africa. But this is particularly so in Luanda because the numbers coming into the city, my own men there were saying, each month are significant and that there are very little preparations made to receive them. And that's one of the great challenges of our own parish set up there is the immense poverty that many of the people who come into the city are forced to live in because there are no services like electricity or water available immediately to them. So you have new communities trying to organize themselves, trying to see about schooling, trying to see about healthcare. So obviously one of the main agencies for that is the Catholic Church because of our background. So our own men who are involved in that area are very much working with Caritas, Justice and Peace, and trying to build up these small communities, very often with meagre resources. The parishes that I visited, not yet parishes, but the chapels where they said Mass, were of very primitive style in comparison to other parts of Africa. But, like with all parts of Africa, a wonderful spirit of prayer, of gathering together, of people who want to celebrate, even when their surroundings are not, you know, very, very salubrious nonetheless. They gather together early in the morning for prayer, for Mass, when the priest can come. It really is, I suppose, a wonderful example of the spirit of Africans that, irrespective of the difficulties that they have around them, they have a tremendous capacity to celebrate life and to celebrate the gift of life and the gift of God in their lives. And that is what really struck me when I visited these small communities that are barely coming up and yet the numbers are huge in these new bidonvilles or the banlieue or the outside areas of the city of Luanda.
You spoke about two things there, the poverty in a nation which is one of the richest in terms of natural resources. It's one of the major oil countries. It has diamonds, so-called blood diamonds, and other kinds of minerals and resources in general. And then you spoke about the spirit of Africa. I mean, you're very familiar with Africa. What struck you in particular about the spirit of the Angolans?
Well, I suppose what struck me most was that, first of all, like as happens in the French countries or the English-speaking countries, the common language that's used in the church is Portuguese, that there are many, many different tribal groups and ethnic backgrounds. So it is the common language, and that is the established language of the ruling class and of the government, etc. And I suppose what really struck me about them was the similarities between them and the other small communities that I have encountered right along West Africa, Central, East Africa. But they are a great sense of working together to build something that's only at its very beginning. If you see some of the churches, they're only very, very primitive by any standards. Sheds, really, with just simple kind of roofing, and yet the church is packed early in the morning for Mass in the middle of the week when you go there. The people are genuinely seeking a way to build their communities, and they see that the church is one of the key ways to do it, really. So I suppose what struck me is what it confirmed for me, that the Angolan people have a great sense of God, a great sense of trying to help each other. Now, there are difficulties, obviously, and poverty is a great thing to be overcome. As you say, the country is very rich, perhaps one of the richest in Africa. And perhaps that was the cause of all these terrible wars.
27 years of war.
Yes, it has been. So you see, it'll take a good while for things, I suppose, to try to level out. No doubt the government has plans, and the president was recently re-elected. So hopefully that into the future, there will be a more stable type of, if you like, a culture of peace that will generate more income, that will raise the people's level of living, and that will give more income to everyone. I suppose the main thing always is the number of children that I saw. Children are everywhere. Now, that's wonderful, but you have to then be able to educate them, and you have to guarantee that they have clean water, that they have medical care. I saw in my own parish, and I heard in other areas, that one of the main challenges for the church is in these two areas. Because with peace, of course, we thank God, there are no more killings, there are no more terrible bombings.
The land is littered with landmines.
The land is littered with landmines, and still you can see the damage that has done. You can see the people.
And you see it physically in the people.
Well, not so much in a big city like Luanda. You will see an odd person maybe with a limb missing. So then you presume perhaps there are centres for taking care of them as well. I didn't visit any of those now. But I think like that, maybe that's why people are leaving the rural areas, one of the contributing factors, that you want to bring your family to safety somewhere. Unfortunately, coming into the city isn't always the solution either, because you're asking them to live in circumstances and conditions that are far different from something that in the rural areas might be very much better for them, you know, that there is better food, better water and all that. However, people make their choices, and one of the realities of Africa today, in sub-Saharan Africa, is the movement to the great cities, and that urbanization is not going to stop. Somebody said to me, they think the government has largely kind of decided just to ignore the people, hoping they'll go back. They don't go back in Africa, they remain in the great cities, because that's where the opportunities are.
Warm thanks there to the Superior General of the Society of the African Missions, Father Kieran O'Reilly. And that's all I have time for on today's broadcast. Thanks for listening. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Bye for now.
Laudator Jesus Christus.